From Washington, D.C., across the nation and around the world, stand by for an overview of the hottest topics and people being discussed on air, online, at the coffee shop, and across the backyard fence, powered by the research of Talkers Magazine, The National Conversation. It's time for the Michael Harrison Wrap. Here's Michael Harrison.
Thank you, Victoria Jones. Monday, March 30th through Friday, April 3rd, 2020, it was a week in which we as a society plunged even deeper into an unprecedented world of fear, mystery, disorientation, and general anxiety. The expression, between a rock and a hard place, has taken on a whole new level of meaning as we as individuals and collectively as a society face decisions for which there are no easy answers. Not just the one we talked about last week in terms of lives versus livelihood, but now, with the increase in state-enforced lockdowns, the choice between civil liberties and public safety. Never before has the question, is the cure worse than the disease, taken on such significance with such a high level of ramifications. People are wondering, and rightfully so, what will the world be like when this thing is finally over? Coming up in the next hour, we'll be hearing from a small business expert who'll tell us how to navigate the relief package if you're running an enterprise on Main Street. A nationally syndicated talk show host who drove alone across the country spooked by the nagging question, who slept in this roadside hotel bed before me? A Canadian broadcaster sharing words of advice with his American colleagues. A psychiatrist addressing the wave of cabin fever sweeping the nation, causing depression and straining personal relationships. And the morning mayor of an East Coast resort city who reports in from a place we used to call America's playground, but nobody's playing. People with microphones, smartphones, and digital recording devices sharing their observations and the feelings of their target constituencies with whom they do their daily dance of affirmation, all part of the verbal stew in which we try to avoid the modern-day syndrome of seeking victory at the expense of truth. Welcome to the Michael Harrison Wrap, an examination of the past week's hottest political and social topics discussed in the American talk media. Information is gathered from a variety of sources, including data tracked by the broadcasting trade publication Talkers Magazine, of which I'm editor and publisher. Okay, let's roll. Joining us now is Kevin Casey, executive editor of Talkers Magazine. Kevin, give us a rundown of the 10 most talked about stories on talk shows in America this past week.
All right, Michael. At number 10 this week, technology and privacy. All kinds of new computer technology are being talked about as people are learning about new platforms and software. For example, Zoom has become extremely popular, seemingly overnight.
Zoom's amazing growth during the past couple of months has proven to be challenging for the company that operates it because the platform has been plagued with all sorts of privacy issues.
At number 9 this week, scams and fraud. The scam artists are coming out of the woodwork.
Everyone must be extremely careful when opening or responding to email offering cures for the disease, great investments to capitalize on unstable financial markets, and bogus government forms and fees connected to receiving financial relief being offered by the relief package.
At number 8 this week, U.S.-China relations. Although many people are still saying it is politically incorrect to blame the Chinese for COVID-19 or distracting to be pointing the finger of blame when we should be concentrating on curtailing its growth and finding a cure, there is growing concern over China's role in its origin and initial spread.
The most important thing for Americans to understand about this sticky issue is to distinguish the difference between the Chinese government and the Chinese people. It's the Chinese Communist Party with whom we have a very serious set of issues, not the Chinese people, and certainly not the Chinese American people, most of whom are here to seek freedom from the repressive and tyrannical regime in Beijing that has exercised brutal control over the world's most populous nation for the past 70 years.
At number 7, celebrities with COVID-19. The list continues to grow, and with each new name comes a deeper awareness of just how real this invisible enemy actually is, that it could strike anyone and no one is immune.
The revelation that CNN primetime personality Chris Cuomo and brother of New York Governor Andrew Cuomo now has the coronavirus has been a particularly compelling development.
At number 6, education and kids in lockdown. Keeping the kids busy and out of trouble day after day after day is proving to be challenging for families facing a whole new social structure within the home. home.
And speaking of home, homeschooling is proving to be far more challenging than many parents expected.
At number 5, personal relationships. Keeping the kids busy and out of trouble is just part of the challenge facing people who find themselves in an increasingly uncomfortable situation.
Yes, the lockdown is creating a growing epidemic of cabin fever, which is putting a tremendous strain on marriages and domestic partnerships, especially in situations where there already were underlying problems in the relationships. Clearly, people need their space, and the lockdown is not helping matters.
At number 4, politics and the presidential race. In many ways, the presidential race has been put on hold, and candidate Joe Biden has been relegated to the political sidelines as the media is obsessed with the coronavirus, and President Trump has replaced his rallies with daily press conferences that keep him, for better or worse, in the public spotlight.
The Democratic National Convention has been postponed until August, if it's going to happen at all, and there are growing concerns over the mechanics of having an election under these difficult conditions, not to mention there's a rising buzz, for whatever it's worth, among Democrats to replace Joe Biden with Andrew Cuomo, as the governor's daily press conferences and impressive handling of the crisis have catapulted him into a new level of political stardom.
At number 3, markets, the economy, and the relief package. Now we're getting into the really big issues of concern in the national conversation. The stock market fluctuates daily in what has become a stomach-churning roller coaster ride, and unemployment claims are at a chart-busting historic high.
One of the week's economic bright spots and successes for President Trump has been his role in getting Russia and Saudi Arabia to agree to curtail the oil war that's been raging between the two nations.
At number 2, the healthcare system. Hospitals have become increasingly stressed by the number of patients and lack of supplies and personnel in dealing with the unprecedented level of traffic rocking the healthcare system to its core. Field hospitals are being set up in public facilities such as the Jacob Javits Center and Central Park in New York.
And doctors, nurses, and other brave healthcare providers are risking their lives like soldiers on the front line in a war to battle the blitzkrieg of this disease.
And at number 1 this week, statistics and projections pertaining to COVID-19. This is where it has begun to get really scary. At the time of the production of this program on Friday, more than 1 million people worldwide have been positively diagnosed as being infected with COVID-19.
And the White House projected the number of deaths in the U.S. alone could reach almost 250,000 people. That puts it into the World War II level of misery. Thank you, Kevin Casey from Talkers Magazine. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. President Trump has signed a bipartisan $2 trillion economic relief plan, the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act, to offer assistance to tens of millions of American individuals, households, and small businesses affected by the COVID-19 pandemic. Its components include stimulus payments to individuals, expanded unemployment coverage, student loan changes, different retirement account rules, and support to small businesses. Obviously, this can get complicated. Here to sort it out for us from the small business owner perspective is Jim Blasingame, longtime host of the nationally syndicated radio talk show, The Small Business Advocate. Jim Blasingame, you are as much in touch with what's happening on Main Street in terms of the business community as anybody in the media. Just how serious is this coronavirus crisis when it comes to Main Street, to small business in America?
Michael, it's very serious, and it's not just serious, it's unprecedented. I mean, if you think about it, you're almost as old as I am. You've been around a long time. You've been to town at least 2 or 3 times. And neither one of us, nobody living, has ever seen a scenario where basically the economy was told to stop. I mean, when have you ever heard a governor tell a business that not only can they not open up, but customers that they can't go in that business? This is unprecedented. We've never grounded to a halt in this short a period, just like overnight almost. And so this is very serious. It's very dangerous for the Main Street economy. As you and I both know, Michael, half of the U.S. economy, half of the $21 trillion U.S. economy is generated from the heroes of Main Street, small business owners. And one of the things I like to remind people about, Michael, when a small business on Main Street collapses, at least one family collapses. So this is not only serious, it's negative force multiplier serious. And so if we all agree on that, then we have to agree that our response to it has to be unprecedented. What do you think?
Well, I agree with you. I think it's pretty amazing. It's the word that I hear is surrealistic. And yes, it is a news story that is unprecedented in terms of the experience of just about everybody or anybody that you'll run into. Now, anytime you have to get involved with the government, whether it's Medicare or whether now it's the small business loans and the relief packages and everything going on, what should people who are in business for themselves listening to this broadcast, what should they be thinking about and what should they know regarding what's available to them and in general, the government's response?
Well, Michael, that is the question for the moment. I can tell you that right now. And so people who know me can't believe they're hearing Jim Blasingame say to the government, you got to step up and step in. Usually I'm saying, government, all we need you to do is get out of our way. We don't need you to help us. We just need you to get out of our way. We'll make our way otherwise. But the thing I remind people about, Michael, is small business owners didn't cause this. I want them to get that message into their head. This is not your fault. You didn't cause this. So you've been asked to do something that you're doing. You're complying with the rules to try to flatten the curve of this disease. So yes, please accept some help. The government is going to have to help us if we're going to come out of this thing on the other side of this thing with our organizations intact and ready to take advantage of what I think will be an expanding economy sooner than later. But so I've actually talked to people who were saying, I don't want any help from the government. I'll just shut my doors rather than take a loan from the government. Well, they don't know all the details to start with, and number one, and it's not their fault in a way because, as you said, Michael, usually when the government says, I'm here to help you, that's not really a lot of help. And in the history, historically, when small businesses are involved, the government hasn't helped us that much. Like after 2008 and 2009, we didn't get most of the money that the Fed sent out to the marketplace. This time is different. This is the point I wanted to make, Mike. This time is different because the government is actually realizing, not only realizing, that they have to save the Main Street sector from collapsing. They're funding it and they're getting it out quickly. And before we wrap up, I'd like to be able to tick off some of the ways that that's going to work. But that's the best answer that I can tell you is it's not your fault. You're going to need help. Take the help. And when we get through with our visit, they'll know why they need to take the help.
Well, we don't have a lot of time, but quick pointers that people can follow.
First thing to realize is there's one tranche of money, there's one emergency cash infusion that is possible. I don't know the exact day, I don't know the exact timing, but go to SBA.gov and you're going to see something unprecedented, Michael. Top of the page, SBA.gov. Top of the page on the right, there's a link that will take you to a form for emergency cash infusion directly into your bank account. It'll take you, never mind what the page says, it'll take you about 10 to 15 minutes to fill it out. It's three online pages. You'll need to know your bank information. You'll need to know your history of your company information. You'll need to know your tax ID or your Social Security number. There's a few details that they'll ask you. How many employees? What's your revenue? What's your expenses? They'll ask you for a few things like that you already know in your head probably. Fill out the form. Give them your bank number, your bank account number, and hopefully in a few days, two, 3 days, they're going to put some money in your account. Bada bing, bada bam. Now that's a separate, Mike, that's a separate amount of money. That's a separate pot of money from the $350 billion in the CARES Act. That's coming directly from the Fed. That was money that they had set aside for emergencies like a hurricane. So that money is going to go in there right away. And I don't know for a fact, I'm told, even though they called it a loan, I'm told that's going to be a grant. Please go do that now. I'm telling people, Mike, before you call your banker and ask for help, go do that. And that way, when you tell your banker you've already done that, they'll know you're serious and they'll I think they'll be a little quicker to respond to you to help you get the next level of help, which will be an actual emergency loan from the SBA, guaranteed by the SBA, part of the CARES Act, part of the $350 CARES Act. And that'll be a different kind of a loan. And that loan, to the degree that you can prove later on that you paid utilities, payroll, mortgage payment, rent payment, handful of specific things, to the degree you can pay that, that amount of money during the emergency period will be forgiven off of whatever you borrow. This is, Mike, this has never happened before. This is a message we've got to get out to people.
That's Jim Blasingame, host of the long-running syndicated radio talk show, The Small Business Advocate, and a prolific author of books on commerce. Jim's website is smallbusinessadvocate.com. Coming up next, a trip to Atlantic City, New Jersey, and a conversation with its unofficial morning mayor. You're plugged in to the Michael Harrison Wrap. Bernadette Duncan spent 26 years as a radio talk show producer. In her new book, Yappy Days, Behind the Scenes with Newsers, Schmoozers, Boozers, and Losers, she shares her adventures in the trenches of big-time talk radio during the changing backdrop of America's pre- and post-9/11 realities. This exciting story includes Bernadette's impressions of the quirky celebrity talk show hosts whom she served during her career, Larry King, Sally Jesse Raphael, Gil Gross, Tom Snyder, Lou Dobbs, Charles Osgood, and more. It's full of anecdotes about hundreds of high-profile guests from media, show business, and politics, also quirky, ego-driven, and neurotic. Yappy Days, Behind the Scenes with Newsers, Schmoozers, Boozers, and Losers, an analytical look at the media, journalism, and the complex nature of ego. Get it now at Amazon.com. Continuing now with the Michael Harrison Wrap. One of the most economically hard-hit cities in America is Atlantic City, New Jersey, a city whose economy is based largely on entertainment, dining, gaming, and tourism. Joining us now is one of Atlantic City's most popular and important citizens. He's been the morning host at radio station WPG for the past 28 years, Harry Hurley. Harry Hurley, you're in one of the hot spots in terms of how devastating the coronavirus crisis is on a community, Atlantic City, New Jersey, hotels, restaurants, recreation. You're the morning mayor of that town. What's your perspective of what's going on?
Michael, great to be on your program. Sorry, under these circumstances. I call it that we live in a new world. I mean, everything changed, and we'll see what we look like coming out the other end, but we're at 34% unemployment. It's a depression. Nobody wants to say it, but it's not a recession. It's not a great recession. It's a depression. Fortunately, we have the fact that all the banks were fully capitalized, so it's not like 2008 when we had the highest unemployment rate, the highest home foreclosure rate, and the banks were not capitalized, and they needed a bailout. So the banks and the financial institutions being fully capitalized helps us. The federal response has been great. Obviously, in our business, the work is more voluminous than ever in very challenging conditions.
When you talk about percentages of unemployment and calling it a depression, are you referring specifically to Atlantic City? I mean, obviously, some of that refers to the nation, but are you specifically referring to Atlantic City with those two figures and that word depression?
Both. And I would say parochial Atlantic City for the moment for this conversation, Michael, because our leading industry completely shut down the casino industry. 27,000 employees go out on one day. Most of the casinos kept people paid for 2 weeks. That's over. So they're all in the unemployment line right now, furloughed until further notice. It's going to be a big, big challenge to both be safe, to be healthy. And I've been using this expression, Michael, that America is made to run, not to stop. So we have to be safe, we have to be smart, but we cannot let our economy topple off the cliff, because without an economy, we die that way. The expression that the cure can't be worse than the disease.
Interestingly, you mentioned something that's very, very true, and that is it was different in 2008 than now because that was a natural, that was a recession or a financial crisis based on natural causes. This is an unnatural situation. The banks have capital. Business was basically doing well, relatively. That gives me, and I'm not an economist and I'm not the most brilliant business person in the world, but from just my perspective, that gives me hope that this thing will bounce back quicker when finally the isolating and the main spike of the crisis subsides than it would if we were going into this with a poor economy. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. As usual, our Babe Ruth, Michael Harrison, is spot on. I've been interviewing financial experts, Wharton School graduates, economists. Here's what we have to look forward to. It's true. This is a sharp, sudden, unexpected decline. But for the reasons you said, because it's not a financial crisis, it's a health crisis, we will have a V-shaped recovery, it's called, and the recovery will be sharp. If we're paying attention right now, the markets have gained back more than 20% of the initial losses. We're actually, if we keep it at this pace, and if, say, we hit the bottom, we were down at 18,000 something on the Dow. The Dow is now approaching 22,500. So we are going to come back. We will fully come back. And what I've been trying to do is be fair, be accurate, give people the truth, but at the same time, not try to bring fear and panic to create paralysis by analysis. Because if we hearken back to the 1918 Spanish flu, they knew nothing, Michael. They didn't have a microscope for 20 years. They couldn't see what they were dealing with. They incorrectly dealt with something that wasn't even in effect. And within a few years, we were in the roaring 20s. So we have technology now. We will have a vaccine. We'll have treatment. We have ventilators. They didn't have any chance. We're going to be fine. It's going to take a little time. And the experts I've been talking to really feel that within 6 to 12 months, we should get back everything that we lost.
Plus, we're going to have a whole new layer of technological culture in terms of how we work and how we communicate. This will be ultimately a time of great forward motion in terms of how businesses operate and how we as workers operate within the business environment. I understand from some of the articles I see, you write a very, very powerful column on the WPG website and in other publications. You seem to be outraged by some of the issues taking place in terms of finances with the state. Fill us in.
Well, we have a very important roadway which really connects Philadelphia and other parts in the tri-state area to Atlantic City. It's called the Atlantic City Expressway. It's a tremendous highway that was the vision of a state senator who was extremely powerful about 50 years ago. And amazingly, incredulously, they are holding public hearings by phone on April Fool's Day, which is fitting, and the day after, 2 days of hearings, to raise the tolls by between 36 and 41% during a global world health pandemic. It is insanity. And I have been crushing them with columns, editorials, on-air commentary, because I can't believe that while people are actually dying and people are furloughed and unemployed, that these politicians could possibly be thinking about raising rates so draconian, 41% possibly. I've been saying they should have shut the tolls down while people are unemployed. Very few people are allowed to be on the road anyhow, and it's all essential people. Shut the thing down while people are hurting. They're jacking it up by 40%. And I want your listeners, Michael Harrison, to know Governor Phil Murphy sanctioned this entire thing. He was directly asked in a global, coronavirus daily press briefing, Governor, do you support the SJTA, South Jersey Transportation Authority, proceeding with public hearings to raise the tolls during this health crisis? The governor's answer was yes, by phone. So they're going to do it by phone, and they think this is something that they should be doing at this time. It's everything that's wrong about government.
That's Harry Hurley, the longtime morning host of Atlantic City, New Jersey Heritage Radio Station, WPG. Harry's website is harryhurley.com. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. You know, it's fascinating how this surrealistic period in which we're all living has brought a bunch of new terms and memes into common usage. Words and terms such as lockdown, isolate, social distancing, hand sanitizer, face masks, Zoom as a verb, to Zoom or to Skype, that is the question, telemedicine, homeschooling, Cuomo for president, daytime and nighttime pajamas, and ending all correspondence with the phrase, stay safe. One of the key aspects of the national conversation has been speculation about the development of medicines, some new and some that have been around a while, to battle the coronavirus. Our next guest is a morning radio talk show host who kicks off each day on hundreds of radio stations across the nation. He just completed an ill-advised and relatively dangerous drive across the country, considering present-day circumstances, from California to his home base in Framingham, Massachusetts, Doug Steffen. All right, Doug Steffen, nationally syndicated broadcaster, a guy who was one of the pioneers of broadcasting by remote. I mean, you were doing it years before anybody else, and you continue to do it. Of course, it comes in handy in this current environment where there aren't centralized radio stations. But
it's kind of amusing. A quick aside, when you listen to some of the folks who aren't used to doing it, try to work their way through it. Even some of the big hosts on big stations, they kind of fumble their way through it because they're not used to doing it. It's awkward. It's hard to do if you're not used to doing it, that's for sure.
Well, one of the things about broadcasting in a radio format is how you feel and where you are while you're doing it. So much of the space that you occupy affects your head, and it takes time to get used to it. Just like back in the earlier days, you remember when you got a job at another radio station. Just being in a different studio with different call letters and different equipment would be something that would be difficult. It's like driving a car with a steering wheel on the other side.
Bring back some memories. I can't tell you how many times I've used the wrong set of call letters on a new set. Now you brought back a memory. I'm thinking of that happening three or four times when I'd be on a new station and I'd still be using the call letters from the old station.
Yeah. So broadcasting from your closet or your living room after being used to being within a certain situation is a psychological handicap to overcome, because so much of doing radio, I use an old term from the 60s and 70s, it really is a head trip doing radio.
Not to belabor this, but when I started working at KBC in the 90s, it was such a fabulous place. The radio studios were real radio studios, and it was a real radio station. And when you walked in there, you felt like you were in a real. It was really a great way to be employed in. In that environment, it was fabulous.
I have to say one more aside, that is that one of your crew, the great Bob Kay, was the program director of KBC in those days, and the studio that Doug is talking about, folks, was the model for the studio that was used in the Frasier television series.
Yes, it was. That's very true.
I'm sure everybody has seen Frasier and knows that iconic studio setup. Yeah. Okay, quickly, you just drove from California to Massachusetts, and I was in touch with you almost every day, concerned about you driving through the thick of this crisis. Quick impressions, quick experiences. What was it like being out on the road, going from coast to coast in the midst of all of this?
Well, there were a lot of trucks, a lot of trains. It made me very optimistic about the future of American industry, because there was so much stuff being moved from one side of the country to another. The idea of me not having the kind of food that I usually eat, I, for the first time in my life, had a chicken, it was a fish sandwich from McDonald's, and the Impossible Whopper Burger, or whatever they call it, I had three or four of those. I don't eat meat, generally speaking, and very little fish, but there was no place open. You drive into the drive-in and you order what they've got. So that was kind of a head trip for me. In terms of what I thought when I went into the hotels where I stayed, it was in the back of my mind that there, who knows? I mean, I guess I was questioning who was there before me, who was sleeping in this bed, who took a shower in the shower stall, you know, stuff like that. We all have gotten spooked by this, some of it for legitimate reasons and some not so legitimate reasons. But I have concluded, Michael, and I just found this out today with Dr. Ken Kronhaus, who is on my program, he suspected all along, and he was calling me every day, as I got toward the end of the trip and the first week that I was home, that I had a touch of the virus, and I think I did. But I overcame it because I did isolate myself. I was being careful about being clean. I have a strong immune system anyway, thankfully. Now that it's over, one of the things that he and I were talking about was being able to use blood plasma. That's going to be the latest thing that people talk about, I think, going forward in the next week or two as to how to knock this thing down.
So, I know that your doctor friend also has been a proponent of something that they have been talking about as one of the potential remedies, and in some cases they actually say it works, is the chloroquine and the hydroxychloroquine and the Z-Pak.
Yes.
And you've been discussing that. And that has been one of the elements of the national conversation, have been
yes.
all of these different kinds of drugs that are on the horizon. Collectively, I'm not a doctor, and I don't want to misuse my bully pulpit here by giving wrong information about something as important as medicine. But I would say that my impression is, based on everything I hear from tests that are being conducted by the leading scientists in Israel to people like Dr. Ken on your show, is that there's a lot of hope on the horizon that we will eventually have the meds to lick this thing. Do you get that same impression?
Well,
obviously,
it's more than on the horizon. It's there. Depends on whether you want to use it or not. There's a doctor in New York named Zelinsky who's been using it this past week. He treated 669 patients with it in one fell swoop, and another 700, and all of them survived except for one, I think, who was a person that was compromised anyway. And then there were 11 people who had slow results, slower than everybody else, but none of them died. So, yes, I think that there is a lot of information. The media in France is touting this because of a study done in Marseille that has now been looked at by a lot of doctors in America, and that's the stuff that the FDA is studying right now. So doctors can use this. They aren't told not to. But there isn't an official, okay, boys and girls, this is from the FDA, this is how you fix the problem.
That's nationally syndicated radio talk show host Doug Steffen, who's heard weekday mornings on hundreds of stations across America. His website is DougSteffen.com. Coming up next, a visit with a radio programmer in Toronto talking about the Canadian perspective on dealing with COVID-19 and the 2020 presidential race. You're plugged in to the Michael Harrison Wrap.
Here's some great news. If you missed the deadline to sign up for health insurance, or if you signed up for a plan you're not happy with, you still have a choice. MediShare is a healthcare sharing program. Hundreds of thousands of Christians are part of this. It can save you a lot. Typical savings for a family is about $500 a month. You can join MediShare anytime. It's easy to call and look into it. There's no pressure at all. And man, what a difference it can make. 855-SHARE-40. That's 855-SHARE-40. This is a message from everyone at MediShare, and it's a simple one. For nurses, hospital staff, doctors, thank you. Thank you for what you do and may be called on to do in the days ahead. And thank you, first responders and grocers and everyone who works late nights to stock shelves. Thank you, truck drivers and delivery workers. Thank you, caretakers of the elderly and vulnerable. To everyone who has their own families to be concerned for, but still serves all of us, thank you. From the more than 400,000 members of MediShare.
Continuing now with the Michael Harrison Wrap as we discuss the hottest topics of the past week in the national conversation. We're joined now by one of Canadian talk radio's most influential programmers. He's the director of News Talk 1010 CFRB Toronto, Mike Bendixson. Even though there are so many similarities between life and the culture of the U.S. and Canada, there are also differences, not just in the way the broadcast industry is structured, but just the way people think and their perspective. What has been the perspective from the Canadian point of view as a news talk broadcaster of the way the United States has handled the coronavirus and politics in general, the presidential election. What's the view from up north?
Well, good big question, as always, from Michael Harrison. I think that, listen, we are concerned, I think, for America at this point as it relates to the COVID virus. I do not think that anyone, or shouldn't say this is a broad statement, but I think there's a lot of people that aren't taking this seriously, and you need to get your act together. I mean, I get it. Kids want to be out on spring break partying. Well, guess what? You're now paying the price for it. The mayor, you know, the governor of Florida not being quick enough. I mean, if anyone is still going out and going to restaurants and going to bars and going to, you know, their usual places, you're in for a world of trouble. And you have to take this seriously. And even here in Toronto, I mean, the mayor is showing up to, you know, soccer fields going, guys, you can't play soccer, go home. And I think people just need to understand that, you know, you may be feeling fine, but you don't even know if you have it. So I think us up here in Toronto, and that was part of the reason why I wanted to reach out to you, is, you know, the message should be loud and clear. Everyone should be locked down and everyone should be at home and no one should be going out. And that, you know, to me, is a message for every citizen in every state. In terms of the politics of it, listen, of course, we're watching what's happening. You know, you're our closest partner. But I think also it's taken a back seat. I mean, everyone was focused on the election. Everyone was focused on what was happening with Bernie and Biden. And I think at this point, you know, that's all taken a back seat. And we are watching very closely how you guys are tackling COVID and how seriously you're taking it. And I think now is the time for people, if they have screwed this up in the past, if your president failed to take it seriously in the past and made jokes about, you know, hey, we're not going to ban cars because people die in car accidents or it's not any worse than the common flu. Okay, you know what? That was then. You made some stupid remarks. Get your shit together and tell people to stay home, and you're going to save lives, because the one, in my opinion, the one way that the Democrats could beat the Republicans in the next election is to put a map up and say, see all these hundreds of thousands of lives that this virus took? It's because Donald Trump didn't act quickly enough. And, you know, it's one thing whether or not you agree with someone politically, but if someone's responsible for taking the lives of your loved ones, that's when politics goes out the door. So I think that there's a lot to be done, and I think we're keeping a very close watch while we're also trying to make sure that our country gets better and our cases grow smaller.
So ultimately, Mike, what do you think this coronavirus crisis, what impact do you think it's going to have in the long term on radio and radio listening?
You know, radio tuning is going to drop significantly, right? It's inevitable, because people are not going to work, they're not going to school, they're not in their regular habits. And as much as we like to think that people are going to sit around at home and go, hey, Alexa, play my favorite radio station, it's just not going to happen, right? Kids are going to want to watch Disney. You're going to want to binge watch your Netflix. And be prepared for AMA to drop significantly.
That's a Canadian radio industry term for ratings, folks.
And be prepared to find other unique ways of interacting with your audience on the platforms that they're on. You know, if you haven't launched a COVID coronavirus podcast, then you should. If you don't have regular coronavirus video updates on your Instagram, you should. If you're not doing regular newsletters and broadcast, you know, tune-in alerts on your email, you should. Because everyone, while we're working from home, the one thing I can guarantee you is they're still reading their inbox on their email, afraid that their boss is going to write them. And if your email is not in their inbox, then you're missing out. So, you know, there's a lot of things that can still be done to ensure that your brand is very powerful during these crazy times when people are probably not tuning into radio as much as you'd like them to.
Mike, I understand that you rebranded to a certain degree, that you came up with a slogan about Toronto and the answers. So what are you saying?
Where Toronto gets answers. Because the one thing that we can do is we can bring experts on to say, here's how you file for unemployment. Here's how you can tell your boss, F you can't fire me because the law is, you know, the law states this. or here's the answer to should I wear a mask or not, or how, should I wash my canned tuna when I get home? You know, all of those questions that people will have, and there's going to be a ton of stupid questions come out. Like, one day my kids were fine to play on the playground. The next day, they weren't. It was that, like, it was that quick. And so radio has the amazing opportunity to be able to bring experts on and explain to parents why your kids shouldn't be on the swing set. And even if they are, how can you make sure that they don't get the, you know, like all of that stuff is where we can really come out on top on this stuff. And that's the that music radio is not going to be able to do, because while they're too busy playing, you know, some ballad from Taylor Swift, you're the ones that are actually telling someone how they can keep their job and, you know, ensure that their bank doesn't foreclose on their mortgage, right?
That's the Straight Talk and Program Director of Canada's premier talk radio station, CFRB Toronto News Talk 1010. His name is Mike Ben Dixon, giving American radio broadcasters a bit of advice on how they can rise to the challenge of meeting the needs of the coronavirus era. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. There's been a ton of talk in the national conversation this past week among Democrats, floating the idea of New York Governor Andrew Cuomo replacing former Vice President Joe Biden at the top of the ticket. Joining us is Fox News Channel correspondent Ethan Behrman, who often takes a progressive point of view. Ethan Behrman, there's a lot of buzz about Cuomo replacing Biden come the nomination. What are your thoughts?
Oh, my gosh. Look, Andrew Cuomo has been so presidential. He's calm, he's clear, he's smart, he's an absolute father figure as he speaks to us every day on the television. This is what America is hungering for in this time of a pandemic, a national emergency. There's so much fear happening in our communities. I can't even begin to tell you how many people just have that sense of, there's a sense of dread. We're trapped in our homes. We're not allowed, when we go out into the public, especially here in Los Angeles, you're now, the government has requested that everybody wear a face mask. We need that strength, that clarity of vision, that communication style, that no nonsense of Governor Cuomo. However, Joe Biden is also an excellent speaker who is comforting, who is sensitive, who emotes and connects with people, who understands tragedy and pain. So to say that it's time to replace Biden with Cuomo, I've been hearing that talk a lot. On the other hand, I don't know that that's appropriate. I'd love to see that debate happen. I mean, it's time for Bernie to step aside. And if we want to have this conversation, I look forward to it. However, are we even going to really have a convention this year? That's the bigger question, as opposed to, will Cuomo replace Biden?
Well, Ethan, what do you think's going to happen? Do you think there's a chance that he will replace Biden?
I don't. I think that there's a lot of excitement around the potential of Governor Cuomo replacing Biden. But the reality is this. Look, Joe Biden is the nominee. He's got everyone behind him. But, you know, barring some, God forbid, some horrible thing that happens to Joe Biden, he's the nominee.
That's Fox News Channel correspondent Ethan Behrman commenting on one of the hottest political talking points in the national conversation this week. Should Governor Andrew Cuomo, or might Governor Andrew Cuomo, replace Joe Biden as the Democratic Party's presidential nominee? The way things change at such rapid speed these days, who knows what the question will be or where we'll be at come August, when the Democratic convention might happen. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. Earlier today, I was looking out the window of my apartment where I'm isolating and working from home, when I spotted a woman running into the parking lot from the building across the way, screaming into her cell phone, "Send the police! Send the police here as quickly as possible! I'm in danger! My husband just spit at me!" I kid you not. Within 10 minutes, the police arrived and short-circuited a potential incident of domestic violence exacerbated by a couple being cooped up together too long during the coronavirus panic. Joining us now from the Behind Closed Doors segment of our program is forensic psychiatrist Dr. Renee Kohansky of the prestigious PsychCast MD Edge podcast. Dr. Renee Kohansky, how's the psychiatry business these days?
Well, not surprisingly, it's booming, especially since I have telepsychiatry available to me, and I think people are getting a little bit of cabin fever.
That's what I hear. I hear that a lot of people are finding their relationships are being tested. Their spouses, their significant others, their siblings, and then parent-children relationships. This really is a test, isn't it?
Well, it's an extraordinary test and in extraordinary times. I think the first week of this situation, people were really rallying together on their best behavior, discovering new parts of their relationship. And then that grew old very, very fast because you were in an enclosed space and there was no place to let it go. And so what do we do when we're stressed out and we're not doing well? Well, we take it out on the ones that we love. And in this particular case, there's no place else to go. So absolutely, relationships are getting pushed to their max. But there are solutions.
Please share some of them.
They're, you know, sort of the basic self-care kind of things that people forget that you can do because you get lulled into complacency. So it's really, really important right now that even though we are in a home together, confined space, to identify your own space within there and your own time and to get onto a schedule. So I think the biggest piece of advice that I can give is for people to get onto a schedule and to get some physical activity into their life if possible. A lot of folks are used to getting up, going to work, doing some kind of, you know, maybe whether it's walking, biking, or even if they hadn't done that before, doing something to get moving. And now they find that one day goes into another, and then they're face-to-face with their spouse or their children who are now homeschooled. So if they can find a routine, get themselves up at the same time every day, get moving, whether it's doing something on YouTube or doing a Zoom, and also finding a little bit of separate time from the people in your home. And where it's appropriate, go outside, take a walk if it's appropriate, but get some distance and do some things to take care of yourself. Remember, you can still Zoom. You know, you can Zoom with your friends. I know people who are having, you know, I'm not encouraging drinking, but you could have a Zoom cocktail hour with your friends. But it's very, very important to have some separate time from the people that you are living on top of right now.
It's interesting you mentioned Zoom as if it's an iconic word. The people at Zoom have enjoyed such a boom to their Zoom that they could hardly handle it. And at this point, it's very interesting how the changing technology has just accelerated to the point that the whole technology world has changed. Of course, Skype and FaceTime are also out there, but I find it interesting that you just mentioned Zoom without even talking about the others. They seem to have benefited greatly. Of course, they're paying a price for that quick growth, and there are some issues that they're dealing with, but it's a fascinating example of how the lexicon of this era has changed the way we talk. One of the most common greetings or endings of letters I have found is "Stay safe." Have you noticed that? Stay safe.
I absolutely have. You absolutely have. Stay safe. Be well. Mm-hmm. And yes, language is everything. Language creates thought. Thoughts create language. So yes, be safe. Stay well. It's a way of reassuring each other. Well, that's a great point. I really like that.
That's forensic psychiatrist Dr. Renee Kohansky, who practices in Mystic, Connecticut, and is heard on the medical profession podcast PsychCast MD Edge, listened to by physicians across America. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap, and that brings us to the conclusion of another program. This has been the Michael Harrison Wrap, looking back at this past week of Monday, March 30th through Friday, April 3rd, 2020. Looking ahead, I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about next week, including the ever-lurking unknown factor, that unanticipated surprise story that can take the national conversation spinning off in a totally unexpected direction. We sure do live in interesting times. I can be reached via email at michael@talkers.com. My podcast, The Michael Harrison Interview, can be heard at mhinterview.com. And if you want to stay in touch with the inner workings of the talk media industry, please visit talkers.com. And that does it for this week's installment of the Michael Harrison Wrap, an overview of the national conversation. Our producer is Matthew B. Harrison. Thank you for listening.
The Michael Harrison Wrap is a production of Good Phone Communications in association with Talkers Magazine. Copyright 2020, all rights reserved.